So it's my pleasure to introduce Matteo Waters. He is a PhD student of Giuseppe Santoro at CISA. And today he's going to talk to us about their recent work on reinforcement learning assisted quantum optimization. So Matteo, is yours.
Okay, so good afternoon, everybody. Afternoon, at least for me. I guess for you, it's still morning. So I'm telling you about a recent work about reinforcement learning assisted quantum optimization, which if you would be interested at the end, you can find out this paper on the archive. So let me start with some introduction, even if I think you already know everything about this. So one of the main aim of quantum computation since its beginning has been the design of a machine, both from hardware and software point of view, that is able, given a certain Hamiltonian, to prepare its ground state through some quantum or hybrid quantum classical algorithm. This is important, for instance, for material under design to study condensed matter problems that are not easily solvable on classical hardware, and also for certain problems in classical optimizations. And we can divide most of the algorithms in this framework into class, those that we can refer to as continuous, that rely in some way on the adiabatic theorem, so tries to modify continuously the wave function from a starting state to the desired one, and digital, where the evolution, instead of being controlled by a parameter that changes continuously in time, is instead done in a stepwise manner. So those continuous algorithm start from those. You want to prepare the ground state of a target Hamiltonian, which is usually written as a spin Hamiltonian with interaction on the Z direction. And you want to prepare it by inducing fluctuation to a driving Hamiltonian, which is in this way, in this framework, a transverse field, transverse magnetic field. And your system is initially prepared in the ground state of the driving Hamiltonian, which is a product state, so it's easy to prepare. And in the computational basis, has equal quantum superposition on all the basis states. Then most famous algorithm like quantum annealing or adiabatic quantum computation, what they do is basically interpolate between the start Hamiltonian, the driving Hamiltonian, and the target Hamiltonian to our continuous parameters S of t that changes from 0 to 1. And if the evolution time is long enough, by solving the time-dependent Schrödinger equation, the adiabatic theorem ensures that the system at the end of the evolution will be very close to the ground state of your target Hamiltonian. The advantages of this method is that convergence is guaranteed in the limit where the evolution time is infinite because of the adiabatic theorem. It's relatively easy to implement because you need, I mean, once you're able to map your Hamiltonian to a physical system, you only need a single control parameter to a transverse field, which is easy to add in a physical situation. Problem is that it is very sensitive to small energy gaps during the evolution. Again, because the adiabatic theorem requires that your ground state is separated from the excited states by a finite energy gap. And it can be hard to optimize the shape of the schedule S of t, because this is a continuous function and you should look the best shape in the space of continuous function. Finally, the time-dependent wave function is an object which is hard to compute analytically or to approximate because it's given by the evolution operator of a time-dependent Hamiltonian. So its expression is complicated and it can be hard to do some analytical calculation over it. Discrete algorithm instead rely basically on the discretization of this time evolution operator. So instead of considering time evolution operator with a time-dependent Hamiltonian, you discretize your schedule S of t in a stepwise manner, and you write the evolution operator as the product of certain number of operators with an Hamiltonian constant in time. Then a further simplification is separating each of these evolution operator in the products of two independent ones, one which contain only the interaction Hamiltonian HZ and one that contains only the driving Hamiltonian HX. This introduces an error, of course, but depending if you want to reproduce true continuous evolution or you're just interested in some way to evolve your system, this error may matter or not. So for instance, if you start from a continuous schedule S of t and you want to digitalize it, there is a very simple relation between these parameters that you will obtain, gamma and beta, as functions of the discretized version of your schedule S of t. And our recent, let's say, version of this algorithm is what is known as QAOA, or quantum approximate optimization algorithm, that treats these parameters, gamma and beta, as variational parameters that can be optimized in order to obtain the best approximation of your desired ground state in the class of function that can be described in this way. The advantages of these methods is that they are insensitive to small gaps, in particular QAOA, because the evolution is not adiabatic with respect to the instantaneous ground state. And it allows for easier schedule control, because instead of optimizing a continuous function, in this case, you need to optimize a set of numbers. So optimization algorithms are much more easy to implement in this way, in this framework. Then QAOA has the advantage that, of course, it's more general than what we call digitized quantum annealing. So digitized quantum annealing, we mean a discretized version of a continuous evolution. So where the discrete schedule, SM, can be seen as the discretization of a continuous one. While QAOA, in principle, the parameters in QAOA can take any values. Problem of this method is that the energy landscape that you obtain can be very rugged. So there can be many local minima, and some of them can lead to very high energy variational wave function. So optimizing in this set of parameters can be very hard. And finally, from an experimental point of view, if you want to implement QAOA, you need many more measurements with respect to quantum annealing, because in quantum annealing, you evolve your system, and at the end, you make some measurements to estimate the energy. While in QAOA, you need to estimate the energy at the end, but then you need to optimize locally your variational wave function. So you need to repeat the measurements many more times. Please interrupt me if I'm not clear, if you want to ask any question. And finally, QAOA, it's harder to improve systematically than quantum annealing, because it is true that increasing the number of steps in this digitized evolution should lead to better results, but actually, this leads also to, it increases the instability of the algorithm, because the number of parameters increase, the optimization is harder, and also it's more sensitive to noise.
I got a question.
Yes?
How do you know that you have more local minima and parameter space? Like, what's the story behind that?
We recently studied the QAOA on the fully connected easy model, the spin model basically. And there is really a huge number of local minima. So if you try local optimization from random, initializing randomly your parameters gamma and beta, you obtain energies on a very large interval. And also looking at the parameters, you see that the parameters differ a lot. So if you repeat the local optimization 100 times, you will obtain at least 50 different local minima. And most of them have very high energy compared to the absolute minimum. This is really problem dependent. For instance, if you apply this method on the uniform easing model, there are still many local minima, but they are all equivalent. So all the minima have the same energy, but still there are many of them. So if you look at the optimized parameter, starting from random initialization, you will generally arrive to different, to different optimized parameters, gamma star and beta star. Does this answer your question?
Yeah, thanks.
So, something that is interesting if whether QAA and DQA can be merged in some way. So it is known that QAA describe a larger class of functions than digital quantum annealing. And there are also, it is also known that optimal solutions given a certain evolution time T generally belongs to bang-bang schedules, which are not continuous. Anyway, in a recent paper, preprint of our group, we show that a digitized QA solution, an optimal digitized QA solution do exist. So an optimal solution which describes the global minimum in this energy landscape that belongs to the digital QA class. So it's adiabatic, and it's the parameters are smooth, so they can be seen as the discretization of a continuous function. Our goal here is to show that a reinforcement learning approach can find these smooth optimal schedules. So reinforcement learning can be used to learn the good control parameter to find this digitized QA solution. So, first of all, let's see how QAOA can be seen as an RL process. So, reinforcement learning is basically the study on how an agent can observe a system and from that observation perform some action that modifies the state of the system in order to maximize a certain reward function. In this framework, the system state is described by the wave function, and the agent observe the wave function by measuring certain observables. Based on these measurements, the agent chooses an action that is a couple of gamma and beta, parameter gamma and beta of QAOA, through what is called a policy, which is basically the strategy that the agent has to decide the actions. Then the parameters gamma and beta are provided to the environment, which is the quantum hardware that perform the quantum evolution through the unitary operator. And then you have the new state and the reward function that is given to the agent to understand if it's doing well or not. Here, you already can see one of the main problems of this method, which we'll talk more in deep later, which is the measurement. So the agent, in order to perform a reinforcement learning process, you need to give some information to the agent. In this case, you need to measure something. This is a problem, a partial problem. I will give some possible solution later on. So the policy itself, so which is again the strategy that the agent has to decide the actions, is parameterized by a neural network. So what we do is you provide those observation to a certain vector to your neural network. These observations are processed by the network, and on the output layer there are the averages of the action gamma and beta. These averages are then used to describe a Gaussian policy, a Gaussian function, from which the actual action A and B, gamma and beta are taken. Also, during the training, of course, of the neural network, all these parameters are changed in order to maximize the reward. And also the standard deviation of these Gaussians are learned during the training. In our implementation, we use a very simple choice for the observables, which is just the expectation value of the driving Hamiltonian, Hx, and the expectation value of the target Hamiltonian, Hz. And then our neural network is really small, just two fully connected layers with 32 and 16 neurons, and with linear rectification activation function, which is this function you see on the right. During the learning process, what it's done, we sample a certain number of trajectories. So we use this proximal policy optimization provided by the OpenAI spinning up library. If you want to know more details, they have a very nice documentation. So the training is divided in a certain number of epochs. And each epoch, at the end of each epoch, the neural network is updated. So the number of epochs tells you how many times you update your neural network. In each epoch, you sample a certain number of episodes, which means an evolution, QAOA evaluation, following a fixed policy. Then at the end, you need to understand how good is this policy, and you update your policy evaluation, which is this value function also parameterized by neural network, and update the policy. In our work, we use these hyperparameters, so 100 episodes per epoch. Generally, we use 124 epochs. And both the policy and the state value function are parameterized by similar neural networks, so with the same geometry. And the reward function is the expectation value of the target Hamiltonian at the end of the evolution. To go more in details on the algorithm, to update the neural networks, you need first to compute gradients. But this is easy because you just need a derivation chain rule, which is known as backpropagation in machine learning framework. And then you need to decide what to do with these gradients. So the two main characters here are the policy, which is again the strategy on how to choose the actions, and the value function, this V, which tells you how good a policy is. So the value function exactly is the expectation value of the cumulative reward. So during a whole episode, you sum all the reward that you obtain, and the value function is the expectation value of this sum of rewards. You have, of course, the real value function given a certain policy and the one you approximate with your neural network. What you have to do in order to update your parameters, once you sampled a certain number of trajectory, you have an estimate of your value function and you can update your parameters by minimizing the distance between the parameterized neural network, but the parameterized value function and the real one. Updating the policy is more complicated. And what you need to do is define this advantage function, which basically tells you if I am in a state with the observable O and I take an action A, which is the advantage of taking this action with respect to following directly the policy. So I'm in state O. I perform action A, it's new state O prime, and I get the reward R. And I compute the difference between the reward I obtained and the value of the new state minus the value of the old state, so which was an expectation of how good the previous state was. This is used to to update the policy, and you try to maximize the ratio between the new policy and the old one by weighting it with this advantage function. A particularity of PPO is that the maximum update that you get at each step is clipped in order to control the maximum change. And this has been shown to improve your results. Again, if you are curious and you want to know more details, on the website of Spinning Up, there is a beautiful documentation. So now we are going to benchmark our method, and we start with the quantum easing chain. So I'm sure you're all well familiar with it. And so in this framework, we start from the initial state, which is the ground state of HX. We evolve with P evolution operator. Each of them is the product of a part containing only HZ and a part containing only HX. At the end, we evaluate the quality of this variational wave function by measuring the expectation value of the target Hamiltonian. Here we focus always at zero transverse field in the target state. And the reward is minus this expectation value of the energy, because the reward must be a positive function. And to measure the quality of the approximation, we compute the residual energy defined as the difference between the expectation value of the energy and the ground state divided by the total bandwidth, in order to make it between 0 and 1. So as a small recap, this is what we are going to do. So start with the ground state of HX. We provide it to the reinforcement learning agent, which performs a certain number of the cycles. So observe, take an action, evolve the state, and then observe again, understand how good was the choice, evolve again, and so on, until you arrive at the end of your episode, and then you measure the quality of your state. So we started from the quantum easing chain because the results for QAUA are known. So on the quantum transverse field easing model, there is this lower bound for the residual energy, which is exact in one dimension. And indeed, when we tested our reinforcement learning agent on our on the easing model, we see that for small for short episodes, for small values of P, I remember you that P is the total the number of evolution steps. So for small values of P, the agent is able to match exactly this lower bound. And it is also able for small systems to understand that if P is large enough, it can find the ground state exactly. So the residual energy drops to zero. The problem is for larger values of P, where we start to see deviation and this curve seems to separate. To cure this, you can add a local optimization step. So basically you perform a QAUA optimization on top of the reinforcement learning actions. So you use reinforcement learning to suggest a starting point for QAUA. Of course, in the Ising model, this falls on this curve because all minima in the Ising model are exact. But this step is quite cheap in this case because we already start very close to a local minima following the RL suggestion. And there are several reasons, we think, for this discrepancy for large values of P. So first of all, convergence is not yet reached in terms of training epochs. So increasing number of training epochs decreases your residual energy, but only very slowly. So it was not really worth it because to decrease sensibly this distance, you need to increase 10 or 20 times the number of training epochs. Another possibility is that with some fine tuning of the training parameters, you would obtain better results. But probably the main reason is that we are using a stochastic policy. So the actions are not deterministic function of the observation, but they are extracted from a Gaussian with a finite width. So the longer the trajectory, the larger, the more they diverge at the end. So it's expected that for very long trajectories, it's hard to find exactly a local minimum or the global minimum. However, I recap you briefly the connection between QAUA and DQAE to analyze the next results. So as we said in the beginning, QAE interpolates between driving and target Hamiltonian with a continuous parameter, and DQA basically discretize this continuous function S of t. What it has been showed is that QAUA is able to find as one of its solution this discretized evolution, and the reinforcement learning is able to do exactly the same. So we analyze the action choice by this parameter S, which is the ratio between gamma and gamma plus beta. And this is the discretized version of the S that you would put in a digitized QA schedule. So what happens is that for a very small number of training epochs, the action choices at the beginning are totally random. But then, if you have still a large trajectory dispersion, but when you start to do local optimization, all these trajectories fall on the same minimum. And when the training epochs are large enough, all local optimization fall on the same smooth schedule, and also the RL actions converges to this one. So in the pictures on the left, you see the first one for a small number of epochs. You see the different trajectories in blue. They are quite close at the beginning, but they then differ a lot. The red dashed lines are the local optimization on top of the action suggested by the reinforcement learning agent. Some of them already fall on this optimal smooth schedule, which are the black empty squares. Some of them fall on different minima. While for large number of epochs, in the picture on the bottom, you see that the trajectory dispersion is much smaller. They all tend to converge to the optimal schedule, and the local optimization all fall on the same minimum. A similar phenomenology holds also in the case of the quantum is in chain with the random couplings. So while before we considered a uniform, the couplings between all sites was uniform, only nearing number of sites was the same. Here we take those JI as random numbers belonging in the interval between 0 and 1, and they are uniformly distributed. This is a harder optimization problem than the uniform Ising model, because this problem belongs to the infinite randomness critical point. But when looking at the results we see of reinforcement learning and reinforcement learning plus local optimization, we see a very similar phenomenology to the transverse field Ising model with uniform couplings. So,
sorry, just a question here. So, do you have to do disorder averaging?
I will tell
for each
you
system size.
I will tell you it in a moment.
Okay.
Okay. So this picture is for a fixed disorder instance. because when you train your neural network, at least in the version we tried, we cannot change the disorder instance during the training, neither during the test. So once you obtained a policy for a certain disorder instance, you have to test the policy you can test it directly only on the same instance. And this is what you obtain. So for small episodes, again, RL alone and RL plus local optimization follow the same curves. Then when P starts to increase, the efficiency of reinforcement learning alone starts to deteriorate, and you need a local optimization to increase the results, to improve your results. Here there are still some open issues, because first of all, we don't have analytical results to compare directly QAOA, so we don't know if this is the best. I mean, if the schedule found by reinforcement learning are the best possible in the QAOA class for the random easing model or not. So we don't know if this solution is optimal. And we still have not checked if this is better than quantum annealing, traditional quantum annealing or not. Whether while on in the transverse easing model, QAOA is better because you gain a factor of, I mean, the residual energy decreases faster than in QAOA than in quantum annealing. The interesting thing here is that, first of all, again, if you fix the disorder instance, reinforcement learning finds the same smooth parameter choice of QAOA. So here you see superimposed the parameter suggested by reinforcement learning and the one you find by the iterative procedure in QAOA that allows you to find this smooth schedule that belongs to the digital QAE class. What's really interesting here is, however, that this allows also for policy transferability. What we mean by that is that you can choose even a very small system size with a single instance and train the network there. Then you get your approximate solution, gamma star and beta star, for this system, and you use that solution as the starting point of a local optimization on a larger system with any disorder instance. And here you see these gray lines are these schedules that you find by training first a small system and then use the action that you get from that training on a larger one, changing the disorder instance. What you obtain is that the schedule is basically the same, and also the energies, if you look at the energies, they are comparable to the energies you get by training directly the system on the larger, the network on the larger system. So this could be a possible way out of the measurement problem, because if you want to apply this reinforcement learning optimization on an experimental setup, of course, measuring directly on your experiments at each step in order to be able to apply your reinforcement learning, it's extremely costly in terms of measurements. But you could use a sort of ancilla system, a smaller one, with the same Hamiltonian, and run that on a classical computer. Use that to extract a good ansatz for the initial parameter to provide then to a QAOA optimization on the true experimental system. So what we are saying here is that reinforcement learning can be used to provide robust and good quality ansatz for a QAOA optimization to be performed then on a larger system in also in a true experimental setup. As final benchmark model, we tested on the fully connected easing model or P-spin model, which is described by this Hamiltonian, this interacting Hamiltonian, and this corresponds to basically a giant spin with an interaction which is determined by this parameter P, which is integer. And the interesting thing is that for P equal 2, you have a second order phase transition. So the minimum energy gap, if you think of an annealing scheme, scales as a power law of the system size. And hence, the annealing time is only polynomial in the chain length. And this can be solved efficiently with the quantum annealing. While if P is larger than 2, the transition becomes first order. So the energy gap is exponentially small and quantum annealing fails. Actually, there are at least fails in its naive version, so just with the transverse field. There are several methods that one can use, like introducing non-stochastic terms to improve the annealing results. But for instance, P equal 3 is the hardest case, and I think there is no way to avoid the first order phase transition between the paramagnetic state at the beginning and your target ferromagnetic state. So here the resources needed in quantum annealing would be exponentially larger in the number of variables. So in another preprint that we uploaded recently, we showed that with the QAOA on the P-spin model and considering only local optimizations, first of all, the ground state of H equals 0 can be prepared exactly with only one a single move, so P equal 1 if n is odd, or P equal 2 if n is even, with gamma scaling as n to the P minus 1. So gamma is polynomial in n. So here there is a mistake from previous slide because, okay, the ground state is this one, so superposition of all states spin up, all spin down, only if small p is even. If small p is odd, the ground state is all spin pointing up. But nevertheless, the result holds. So you can prepare the ground state with a single move for if the system has an odd number of spins. So, and moreover, any target state, so if you, in your target Hamiltonian, you choose a transverse field larger than zero, you can find exactly the ground state with P equal n half plus 2 if small p is even, or n plus 1 moves if small p is odd. Here, for instance, we show you the residual energy as a function of the number of QAOA steps for p equal 2, so there is a second order phase transition, and we chose the transverse field in the ferromagnetic phase, but not zero. And these are results where we started, where we initialized the parameters gamma and beta with random numbers. So here you see that all these curves for different system sizes collapse perfectly, and the residual energy goes to exactly to zero when the number of parameters is n half plus 2. This holds also if you consider the Hamiltonian with small p equal 3, so with a first order phase transition. And that means that you can prepare any state, any ground state of this Hamiltonian with polynomial resources, even if quantum annealing would require an exponentially long time. Another feature of this model is that These minima that allows you to prepare exactly your ground state are very hard to find. Or better, before arriving to the region where your ground state can be prepared exactly, it's very hard to find good solutions. And your results depend strongly on the initial value of your parameters gamma and beta. Here, for instance, we compare the results for two chain length, 32 and 64, with two different kind of initial choice of gamma and beta. So when it's written R in it, means that the parameters are initialized with the random numbers, while L in it, they're initialized with the discretization of the linear schedule of S of t. So if going, if it's written down, yes, with this choice of the initial gamma and beta, which comes from a linear annealing protocol. And what you see here is that a clever initialization improves drastically your results. Problem is that those are very unstable. So here they are plotted in linear scale, but if you go in logarithm scale, these are the results only for n equals 64, you see that the results with linear initialization starts to oscillate a lot when p increases. This is because the energy landscape is extremely rugged with many minima, and so a little noise can drive your system in a minima far from the optimal one. And here you see a section of the parameter space when there are only, which is a two-dimensional section of the four-dimensional parameter space when the number of steps is equal to two. And you see already here that there are many, many different minima. When p increases, this is only getting worse. When we compare reinforcement learning to these methods, we see again that it's quite good for small values of p, but then the quality deteriorates rapidly as p increases. But still, reinforcement learning is better than QAOA with random initialization of the parameters. The nice thing is that if we perform a local optimization on top of these reinforcement learning actions, we obtain something very nice. So a curve that is comparable with the linear initialization for small values of p, but then it has lower residual energy and it is also more stable. So apparently, reinforcement learning is able to to suggest good answers for the QAOA to start the optimization. And indeed, if we look at the parameters chosen by the reinforcement learning agent, we see that they are smooth. So the blue lines are smooth. They can be interpreted as the discretization of a continuous function. And when we perform the local optimization on top of them, their shape changes only slightly, while if you try to do directly QAOA on the p-spin model, the optimized schedule would be extremely noisy, so with very strong oscillations. So nice thing of reinforcement learning is that it suggests smooth action choices. But the performance decreases when the number of QAOA step increases. On the other hand, if you perform a local optimization on top of reinforcement learning, the performance increases a lot, but you lose some of the smoothness of the action choices. Anyway, even if you see in the bottom picture different optimized schedules with the red dashed lines, their energies always are all in a very small window. So they are basically all within numerical error. But this also means that the minima are different. So even if those are very close in energy, they represent different minima. So again, one of the drawbacks of QIOA is that in certain cases, the energy landscape can be really a mess. Okay, and some final questions on the P-spin model, which is something we are still looking at, is understanding if these schedules are adiabatic. Adiabatic with respect to the discretized evolution operator, so not with respect to an instantaneous Hamiltonian with a continuous evolution. And something, say, particular of this schedule is that it does not interpolate between 0 and 1. So while, if you go back to the okay, to the both to the randomizing model or transverse-field-easing model, you see that these schedules start with a small values of S and then increase toward one. And you, if you increase the number of steps, it approaches a continuous function that goes from zero to one. Instead, in the case of the P-spin model, this does not happen. So the schedule S tends to saturate to a finite value, even if you increase the number of total steps. So it seems to suggest that the best move is not to start modifying slightly your initial state, but starting directly with a large move, which of course is not adiabatic with respect to a continuous evolution. And yet another open question is understanding if the presence of these many bad local minima that prevents you to, I mean, that make the optimization hard is due to non-local interactions, because the parameter space of both the easing model and the random easing model are much simpler than the one of the PSP model, even with P equal to, which is a trivial Hamiltonian. So to summarize our result, we tried to suggest this RL approach for quantum optimization in the QIOA framework. And we showed that reinforcement learning is able to suggest smooth actions, contrarily to a naive optimization in QIOA, and sometimes even to a clever optimization. Meaning, in the easing model, you can find the smooth schedules by an iterative optimization, using the results for a smaller number of total step to initialize the next optimization while increasing the number of total steps. But for instance, in the P-spin model, this does not happen. So we tried in several ways, but we were not able to find a smooth protocol for the P-spin model working directly in QIOA, while RL is able to suggest smooth schedules. Moreover, our method needs a very small number of observables. In practice, this time only two, the expectation value of HX and HZ. And it converges to adiabatic optimal schedules, at least for the transverse field easing model. And finally, the strategies that you learn can be transferred among different system sizes and in case of disorder, also different disorder instances. And this is a possible way out from the measurement problem, because indeed you can learn on a small system where the training is cheap, and you can also simulate it on a classical hardware, and then transfer what you learned on a larger system that you are reproducing experimentally. The main drawback, beside the let's say the obvious slowness of neural network training, is that it requires many observations during the whole evolution to provide information to the agent. So the main open issue from our point of view is to give other possible solutions to the measurement problem. And we have not started working on this, but we think that weak measurements, coupling the system with ancillary qubits and measuring only these ancillary systems, can be used to solve at least partially this measurement problem. And even if you introduce some decoherence in your system, it's not, maybe this decoherence, it's not a bad thing for finding a good approximation of your target state. Then understand how much our protocol is robust to noise. So we already checked that if you introduce some noise on the initial state during the training and during the test, our scheme works. So it's insensitive to noise on the initial state of the evolution. It would be interesting to understand if the continuous, what we call the adiabatic schedules, are more robust to noise with respect to a generic QAOA solution, because this would corroborate the need of searching these smooth continuous schedules. Then something from more conceptual point of view, understand how this collapse of the learned policy works during the training. So you start from random policies, and then at a certain point, when you perform local optimization, all the policy that you learned collapse on the same minimum. So understand how this works, how this happens, and then check if our method works also for more complex Hamiltonians, employing more advanced numerical techniques during the evolution, like DMRG or MPS. And with that, I would like to thank you for your attention, and thank also to our collaborators in this project, which are my supervisor, Giuseppe, and then two postdocs, one in the University of Constance, Emanuele Panizzon, and one at the University in Innsbruck, Glenn. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Theo. Very nice talk. So, questions? So I have a question. Did you check how the optimized schedule, what is the gap along the optimized schedule, whether they are avoid regions where the gap is closing?
So we didn't check in this work, because it's something that is already done in the previous paper by Glenn. Then they characterized with greater precision these smooth optimal schedules. But the problem is that is understanding which gap you want to measure, because you don't have an instantaneous ground state to compare with, so you know, or an instantaneous Hamiltonian. You can check, for instance, if exists a continuous Hamiltonian that replicates your trotterized evolution and understand which is the gap there. Mm-hmm. But actually, the most appropriate way to define adiabaticity here is taking at each step your discretized evolution operator, diagonalize it, and understand if your evolution is adiabatic with respect to that operator. So if your state is close any step to an eigenstate of your evolution operator or not.
Nice.
But there is not really a notion of an energy gap here with respect to something because you don't have a ground state to refer to.
Okay. Other questions? Now a second question. Do you guys try 2D models? I mean, things more difficult, like using glass?
Not yet. First of all, because they are more complicated. And second, this is a project that we started quite recently. And at a certain point, we were in a haste to publish it because in 3 weeks, on the archive appeared other 3 or 4 papers doing something similar. So we said, okay, we need to put this out immediately and then try to understand how to improve this. Actually, I think that before going to 2D, one of the most important thing to understand is how to solve this measurement problem, really. So, because our way out, it's a possible way out, but it's not guaranteed that it works always. So one of the key elements of reinforcement learning is that the agent needs some representation of the state, but no one tells you what this representation must be. So for instance, the information that you gain by coupling your system to an ancillary system and measuring only that one, maybe even with weak measurements, is enough to provide the agent information, you know, that he can choose how to act on the system itself. This would be very interesting, but from the implementation point of view, it's slightly more complicated. So I think next we will be working on that. When we will be able to meet again and talk more seriously about this thing.
Yeah.
And there are also, this is not totally new idea of measuring an ancillary qubit. There is a paper I don't remember the group, but basically, they wanted to use reinforcement learning to do noise reduction on a 3-qubit model. And what they do is they couple these 3 qubits with a 4th one and measure only the 4th one to provide the information to the RL agent. So this, for instance, is a way that has already been tried with reinforcement learning and quantum systems, different framework, but since there it worked, maybe it would work also here.
I see. Thanks. Last question.
I was wondering how important is this reinforcement learning model that you use? And did you experiment with different models? Because there are a lot of different methods out there. So why did you choose this one?
You mean why we choose this particular implementation of reinforcement learning, or why we choose reinforcement learning for quantum optimization?
No, the first one. Like, why this specific implementation?
Well, the specific implementation, so the algorithm we choose, PPO, it's because in our group, the main RL expert was already working with PPO algorithms. So he knew pretty well how to work with them. And we decided to stick to that one. So we checked that that one worked pretty well, at least as a proof of principle. So we used PPO. And honestly, up to now, we used the library almost as a black box. So the spinning up, it's very nice because it contains several reinforcement learning algorithms written in a very simple way, in the simplest way possible. So they are not really the state of the art when talking about efficiency, but they are easy to read even if you're not an RL expert. And you can use them also with, playing very little with the library itself. So our first idea was that, okay, mainly starting from the P-spin model where we couldn't find these smooth schedules, we thought, maybe reinforcement learning could work. Who knows, maybe it is able to learn good strategies in this very rough parameter space. And this Emanuele, this collaborator of ours, told me, okay, I know this library, I'm already using it. It's quite nice. So we tried with that one. Moreover, not all algorithms deal with continuous action spaces. So right. In this case, the action space is continuous because you need to choose gamma and beta from a continuous interval. And PPO is one algorithm that deals successfully with these continuous action spaces. So that's why we choose it, basically.
I see. Because you have these Gaussian actions, right? That cause this spread of exploratory
that's
spread.
True. The fact is that first of all, reinforcement learning is not a global optimization technique. So it's not meant to try to beat other global optimization methods. That's not the purpose of reinforcement learning. Reinforcement learning tries to map each state in a certain class of functions to a certain action that it can perform in order to reach a certain target. So in this way, reinforcement learning is interesting because it's not like a direct optimization in which you say, okay, this is your variational wave function, optimize me the parameters. What reinforcement learning does is I give you a state, tell me which action to perform in order to go closer to your target state. And you can provide reinforcement learning any state at this point. I mean, at least belonging to the subspace it explored. Given that the fact that the action is Gaussian, we tried also to implement a version where the action must be stochastic during the training, because otherwise the agent is not able to explore. So you need a certain width of your Gaussian in order to explore several actions. Then the standard deviation is learned during the training. So it's adapted in order to minimize the spread of your trajectories at the end while keeping the final reward high. The problem
it like changes during the episode, like
not during the episode, but during the epochs. So at each epoch, also, I mean, the standard deviation is a parameter that is learned as all the parameters of the neural network. Then you could try to enforce deterministic actions. So instead of extracting your action from your Gaussian, you just take the average of the Gaussian as your action. But okay, this for sure kills the values of the trajectories, because if you start from a certain state, you will evolve always in the same way. But this does not improve your result. So the best way to do it is actually you keep a finite width, you repeat the test many times, and then you look which is your best solution among the one you obtain, especially in a continuous action space, because maybe the best set of actions, you never experience that. And if you choose a deterministic action, you will never experience that. While if you leave stochastic action also in the test, there is the chance that you improve your result with respect to what you did during the training.
Okay, yeah, thanks.
All right, let's thank Matteo again for the very nice talk.
Okay, thank you for this opportunity.